It's 7:41 and time for your KDNK local newscast for this Monday morning, December 19th. I'm Gavin Dahl, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. After an almost five-hour meeting last week, including public comments, the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission voted unanimously to move forward with controversial predator control studies in the state, including the Piance Basin. Amy Haddon Marsh reports.
40 people participated in the public comment period during a Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission meeting about a proposed predator study on the Western Slope. Most of those who spoke were against killing the predators, including Western Slope resident John LeCoq.
I'm in the recreation industry, yet I'm very much opposed to this new plan. Killing bears and lions to increase the deer population in Colorado, I think, is just not the best way to look at this.
Colorado Parks and Wildlife's plan to kill bear and mountain lion to protect mule deer comes from a 2015 West Slope Mule Deer Strategy Plan that showed how various factors contributed to an overall decline of West Slope herds. The agency had public meetings throughout the state prior to the plan's approval. People were asked to pick the top three management concerns that were contributing to mule deer decline. They also rated the top three concerns they thought CPW could control and those the agency could not control, such as weather and disease. One of the management concerns that CPW can control is predation. The agency decided to initiate a predator control study in the Piance Basin and near Salida to see if deer fawns would have a better chance of survival if there were fewer black bear or mountain lion. Tim Monahan, CPW's legal counsel, said he didn't see any legal flaws in the plan and that it was a policy decision. He also urged the commission to take all comments into consideration.
I don't think that you should discount any comments, whether they be based on emotion, whether they be based on lay information, whether they be based on expert testimony.
Commissioners asked very few questions and with very little discussion voted unanimously to start the study. Delia Malone, local biologist and representative of the Rocky Mountain Sierra Club, told KDNK that the decision was unconscionable and a violation of the public trust.
They based their decision on science out of the 19th century that continues the vendetta against large carnivores. It was a decision to benefit the livestock industry, to placate the sport hunting industry, and it had nothing to do with enhancing the biological diversity that is your and my inheritance as part of the public in Colorado.
She says habitat degradation due to excessive livestock grazing, oil and gas extraction, and development is the problem.
Lions select the weak, they select the diseased, and when they do that, they make the herd healthier. Yes, lions eat young deer. Even bears, when they're coming out of hibernation, eat fawn that have just been born. But that has such a small impact on their populations. It's negligible.
Malone doesn't know how the Sierra Club will respond to CPW's decision, but said this is the kind of thing that ends up in court. The experiment begins locally next May and June on private land north of Rifle and will continue during those months for 3 years. CPW says removal methods include traps, foot snares, and trailing hounds for capture. The animals will then be shot. For KDNK, I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.
We will link to more information about the studies and audio minutes from Wednesday's CPW meeting at KDNK.org later today. With an increasing population and out-of-state travelers, there are more drivers on Colorado's roads than ever before. Shaylin Batt, executive director of the Colorado Department of Transportation, shared some important takeaways with Benta Berkland on the new reality for Colorado motorists unless more money is found to fix roads and bridges and build new road projects.
One of the major goals of your department is to slow the growth rate of congestion. How feasible is that given your current funding challenges?
It's going to get worse. I don't know how else to say it. It's going to get worse. I can't operate a two-lane highway in the monument section of I-25 in a way that deals with the capacity issues that we have. I can't deal with the Loveland issues. I can't deal with a two-lane section of highway when 3 million people want to get up to the mountains. However, there are things that we can do. There are steps that we can take. Technology, connected vehicles. So if in 10 years we have computers are running the vast majority of cars right down the center of the lane, maybe I don't need 12-foot lanes. I can reduce my 12-foot lanes on interstates to 9 or 8-foot lanes. And I can go out and widen I-25 with some paint.
You've said before that expanding lanes is a 20th century mentality.
If you think about it, the reason we have a challenge with transportation in Colorado is because we have an interstate system that was designed in the 50s, built in the 60s for a population of the 1980s that was about 3 million people. We have double that now, and we're going to 8 million people in the next 20 years. So there's a concept called induced demand, which just says that as soon as you build a lane to a highway in a congested area, that lane will then fill up because it will absorb traffic from other sources, you know, just like I-25 has done in the T-Rex section here in Denver, which is why we look at managed lanes as sort of the way of the future.
Do you think is any way to do it without that, or do you think everything will be a public-private partnership?
I have a $9 billion shortfall in terms of important projects that we need to get built in the state. Almost all of our budget goes to maintain the system that we have. Without a toll revenue source, which is what a public-private partnership is, it's let's bring in money from the private sector to advance a project like US 36. We built that probably 30 years sooner than we could have with traditional financing methods. That's the only way to entice the private sector to provide their funds so that we can accelerate these projects.
State lawmakers in both parties say they want to put more money into transportation. They just can't agree on how to do it. Do you see a middle ground?
Yeah, it's actually surprising that we haven't been able to sort of solve this problem because there's so much middle ground. There is so much room for bipartisan compromise. I think that Governor Hickenlooper was hopeful for that last session. I think that the pessimists could say that, you know, this is all just political posturing. I think that I'm an optimist, and I believe that people, when they say that they want to move transportation forward.
Do you think Colorado should try to raise the gas tax or take a different approach? I know there's pilot projects looking at miles driven.
So I know what's going to happen. You ask me, should we raise the gas tax? I'm going to say yes, and then I will catch flack for saying, as the executive director, that we should raise the gas tax because it's politically unpopular. Yes, we should raise the gas tax for transportation, and I'll tell you why. Everybody is sitting in congestion right now on Colorado roadways, or they're hitting potholes. When you sit in congestion on I-25, on I-70, you are paying. You're paying with your time, your goods, whether they're your groceries or any other things that are sitting in trucks that are sitting in congestion, cost you more. So I would argue that we're all paying more in an unintelligent fashion. So if we raise the gas tax, which has not been raised since 1991, heck, even if we just indexed it to what it should have increased because of the rate of inflation since 1991, it would be about a 10-cent increase. And we could use that money to then make sound investment decisions. So we are looking at a pilot in terms of a road usage charge. It's probably engendered more heat and attention than is warranted. It's a 100-vehicle voluntary pilot because there are cars out there that don't use any gas anymore. In the future, the gas tax, 10 years from now, will no longer be the way that we can collect transportation revenue. So I would argue it is prudent for us to go out in a voluntary way. I think we're getting a lot of pushback from this is Big Brother or this is the government. People have privacy concerns. If you have a cell phone, your data is already out there. And so if we want to have a societal discussion around privacy and data, that's one thing. But we can do a road usage charge through just having people report their odometer reading. So it is very clear that we need a funding source. Everybody talks to me about the projects they want to get built, but nobody wants to really focus on how we pay for what gets built.
That was Shailen Batt, the executive director of the Colorado Department of Transportation. I'm Benta Berkland in Denver.
There's speculation that Bears Ears in southeastern Utah will be designated as a national monument later this week. Reporter Austin Cope from Rocky Mountain Community Radio Station KSJD in Cortez learned more from Bill Boyle, the editor of the San Juan Record newspaper in Monticello, Utah.
I've heard rumors from the conservation community, from local residents. The Salt Lake Tribune had a story talking about some of the same key concepts. And then Tuesday night, much to my relief, you go out on a limb a little bit when you report a rumor, but Senator Mike Lee on Facebook had a post about similar ideas that he has been hearing. So I felt confident in reporting it and reporting it as a rumor, but a rumor from several sources.
You've said before that the Bears Ears controversy is a little more, say, nuanced than the national media has been portraying it. Would you say that's still the case now?
Sure. Anytime you make a designation of millions of acres of public land, there are consequences, both positive and negative, to that. And I think a lot of people, it just boils down to whether I like it or not. Those of us here living locally face the repercussions of those decisions and see it in a bit more nuanced way than just the yes or no or up or down or do it or don't.
What's an example of some of those repercussions that you might face in Monticello?
No one needs to tell us locally that we have a spectacular landscape in the area, absolutely worthy of all sorts of designations, from national park to national monument to leaving it just the way it is. I think that there's a perception locally that the land has been taken care of quite well by local residents. I think one of the things they chafe at the most is this perception that there's rampant looting and destruction, when really the challenges to the land will probably come with visitation rather than with traditional uses.
Long term, is the Bears Ears issue an issue that's going to have a clear end, either if a monument is designated or if it's not?
Well, one of the things that I thought may be a positive initially was that this would resolve long-standing issues. FLTMA, or the Federal Land Policy Management Act, was passed in 1976, and many other states have figured out their wilderness designations and have hammered out these questions, but in Utah, it has just been on the political burner for decades now, and I had hoped that this would help resolve it, but I don't think that it will. With the political climate in Washington, D.C., and a new administration coming in, which is not hesitant to verbally state that they'll overturn prior action, I don't know what could happen, but I think that regardless of what happens with the Obama administration, there will be loud voices asking the Trump administration to make some changes or wonder how this will be resolved.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see a resolution on December 23rd, if that's the date and if that's what happens. It just moves on to another phase of the public lands process in southeast Utah. It's a time of great uncertainty in San Juan County and a lot of anxiety here. I think that people are dreading what's going to happen, but in some ways, once that happens, if there's a designation, then we can move on to the next phase. But I'm not sure what that'll be.
Bill Boyle of the San Juan Record in Monticello, Utah. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks to KSJD for sharing that audio. This is KD&K. The deadline to enroll in what's commonly referred to as Obamacare was supposed to be last week, but it has been extended. Today is the last day to get signed up for health insurance on the Connect for Health Colorado Exchange for next year. More information at 855-752-6749. The U.S. Forest Service just handed Arch Coal a Christmas present. A controversial loophole in the Colorado Roadless Rule will open 20,000 acres in the Sunset and Flatirons Roadless area next to Mount Gunnison in the West Elk Wilderness to coal mining. In 2012, the Forest Service adopted the Colorado Roadless Rule, which protects 4 million acres of the state's national forest. The Roadless Rule included the loophole, which was vacated in federal court because the Forest Service did not disclose the climate change impacts of mining the coal. Now, according to environmental law firm Earth Justice, the Forest Service admits that this will undermine clean energy development, result in millions of tons of climate pollution, and worsen climate change. Arch Coal has an application pending, which could take effect within weeks, to mine underneath 1,700 acres of roadless forest and to build 6 miles of road and 48 drilling pads right next to the West Elk Wilderness. Roaring Fork School District plans to delay the start of the 2017 school year by 2 weeks to minimize the impacts from the Grand Avenue Bridge closure and construction on facilities throughout the district. RFSD wants public input and has launched a new survey to gather feedback. Of course, what student wouldn't want 2 extra weeks of summer vacation? You can find the proposed calendar and survey at rfsd.k12.co.us or just search Roaring Fork Schools. And the U.S. Forest Service has released a draft decision on new projects at Copper Mountain Resort. The environmental assessment describes potential impacts of an alpine coaster, a new bike trail, more snowmaking infrastructure, and construction of a new drainage management system. More info is available on the White River National Forest website at fs.fed.us.